We're continuing with Mishnah Hey of the first chapter. Yossi ben Yochanan ish Yerushalayim. He must have been a big Talmid Chacham if he was the man of Jerusalem. Jerusalem was filled with sages. He used to say, Yehi veitcha patuach lirvacha. You should run an open house. It means people should feel comfortable coming to your home. Like Avraham Avinu had four entrances to his house. The general theme of Avraham's home is we're happy to have guests. So this is, in general, this is the correct approach. However, you have to pay attention to numerous things. Number one, are you built for it? Is your wife built for it? Number two, is this the correct stage in your life to fulfill this Mishnah? The Mishnah is a general guideline. However, sometimes you just got married. I remember the morning after our wedding, the phone rang at 6 o'clock in the morning. So I'm supposed to do chesed, but does that mean that I just got back from the wedding at 2 o'clock in the morning, at 6 o'clock I'm already supposed to be on the phone with other people? I don't think so. So the idea that you have to run an open house also has its limitations. There's a time for everything. You have to see what stage of life. If your wife isn't healthy as it is, or she isn't keeping up with the workload, she doesn't have enough time for the kids, you don't have enough time for the kids, it could be this isn't the stage in your life to have an open house. Having an open house doesn't mean that every guy should come to your house. When we got married, my wife was very young. We got engaged, she was 19. And she was teaching in a school. There was a boy who had all kinds of problems in his home, and she helped him a lot. So the kid was 13 or 14, and my wife asked me, what do I think that we should bring the kid home, that he should start coming to us Shabbosos? So I said, this kid needs a home that's going to be with him for many years. And it's not right. What's going to happen is, in 4 years, he's going to be 18, and you're going to be 23, and I'm going to be an old man. He's going to be closer to your age than me, and he's going to be, in the sense of, the relationship, his relationship won't be with me. You're the one who's teaching him every day. His relationship will be with you. We have to get him a home that will take care of this kid and give him a home long term. Even as he grows, even as he goes through his teenage years, he has to have a home. So, run an open home doesn't mean that every person matches our home at every stage of the game. You have to figure out what's right at what stage of the game. Try to give poor people a job. So that means you hire someone and you know he has a very hard time making a living. So you know that you could get this done for 100 shekel. And he charges 120. So maybe you should give him a tip of 10 shekel and pay him 130. You could look at it and say the guy's a quack. No one's going to hire him. The running rate is 100. Or you could look at it and say, the guy needs a hand. Let me help him out. He's not making ends meet as it is. Let me give him a little bit more. Let me tip him. Look at it as tzedakah. Again, it's an attitude. So if you can't afford it, don't do it. But if you can afford it, so the nicest way to give tzedakah, we have 10 levels in halacha. The nicest way is by giving the person a job. Yiyu aniyim b'nei v'techa. Hire poor people. And I could tell you, I know more than one millionaire who made their millions this way. As I'm talking to you, I'm thinking of three. Three millionaires, which each one made their millions by hiring people who were very down on their luck, and no one else would give them a job. I just thought of a fourth one. There are people like that. They do it for the right reasons. They do it to help the other guy. They do it intelligently. But you should know that it doesn't have to be detrimental to your company. One business owner told me that there was he met a wielder, a guy who wields metal machines, and he saw the guy, he was doing a good job. So he asked him, are you looking for work? So the guy said, I'm not sure if I'm looking for work or I'm looking to die. So he asked him why. He said, they're about to fire me, my wife divorced me, and I don't do anything but work and come home and get drunk, and I live in a trailer house, and I'm not sure why I go home, I'm not sure why I keep doing this, what there's left to live for. So he said to him, give me your address. And he hired a U-Haul truck, and he showed up at his address. He said, if you want, my company will fund your moving close to where we have our company. You'll work for us. You'll be our, I don't know what he needed in his, he said the guy is the most faithful worker he ever had. He saved his life. He brought him. Now he has a very, very faithful worker who does everything for him. He works very hard. Look, some of these stories have tragic endings. Not every time that you try to help someone are they really going to reciprocate. However, the Mishnah does teach us an approach. The best way to help the poor is to give them a job. And the Shulchan Aruch, based on the Rambam, lists 10 levels in charity. Level number 1 is give the person work. So the Mishnah says, try to give the poor work in your home. Again, I think the Mishnah is teaching us an attitude. I dated a girl once, and I broke up with her because of the way she treated a waitress. The waitress looked like she was white. She had worked a long day, it seemed. Many of the waiters and waitresses come to do that job to fund their schooling after working long days, and they're very tired. And she was very not nice to the waitress. And I felt like, where's the Rachmanos? The attitude of Yehu Aniyim B'nei Veitecha, it's an attitude to the other person who's working. Very often in Western civilization, they teach us to demand service. This is what I paid for, this is what I should expect. And the Mishnah is telling us there's another angle to how you look at the worker. Look at his family, look at his life. Yehu Aniyim B'nei Veitecha, the Mishnah says, try to hire the poor. To make them be common in your home. They should be finding work there. Ve'al tobe sicha im ha'isha. And don't... Al tarbe. Al tarbe means don't have excessive idle chatter with a woman. So it didn't say don't. It said don't have excessive. Al tarbe. Be'ishtamru. It didn't say don't talk to her. It said idle chatter. With your one's own wife, Chazal said, your conversations should generally be meaningful conversations. You speak about what's happening in life. You speak about what's happening with your kids. You speak about many things that are important. And then you should know that there's a certain amount of idle chatter that also has to be a part of the home. Not everything's serious. But don't do it in excess, says the Mishnah. Al tarbeh. Now this is how much is called al tarbeh. So the idea is, many Rabbanim said, the idea is, whatever you need and she needs, that's not called an excess. Whatever, you both have needs, there's a certain amount of idle chatter. You need a certain amount, she needs, that's not an excess. Beyond that is an excess. If that's what Chazal warned us about our own wife, certainly I shouldn't be having idle chatter with my friend's wife. Now here I want to discuss a few points. In terms of modesty, so very often when a person does not grow up in a religious environment, so they're missing a certain sensitivity when it comes to modesty. We don't generally call other women by their first names. It's not appropriate that you come to Rav Listman's wife. I don't know what his wife's name is because I've never called her by her private name. But let's say her name is Chava. I don't know what her name is. You're not supposed to call her Chava. She's Rebbetzin Listman, Mrs. Listman. She's not. We don't refer to someone else's wife by her first name. Now, I could tell you that when I became the rabbi of the Ashkenazi community in Kochav Yaakov, so a lot of the women, they speak about one another. The husband speaks about his wife. They all use first name basis. So initially, I'd come home and my wife would ask me, did you meet so-and-so? And after a while, it clicked. I told my wife, even when we speak at home, I have to be accustomed to calling all these women as Mrs. So-and-so and Mrs. So-and-so and Miss So-and-so, not by their first name, even when I'm talking about them. Because I shouldn't, when I'm talking to the husband or when I'm talking to the woman or when I'm talking, I shouldn't be talking about her on a first name basis. We part of the modesty that should exist between men and women is that a man should not call another woman, another someone else's wife by her first name. We call her Mrs. something.
Even if you knew them before they were married?
Yeah. Yeah. If possible, we call them Ms. We once had a secretary in yeshiva. Her name was Rachel. I went to the Rosh Yeshiva and he asked me, could you please take this up to the secretary and ask her to make 30 copies? So I wanted to make sure I knew which secretary he meant. I said, you mean Rachel? He said, I mean the secretary. I said, you mean Rachel? He said, I don't know. I said, the woman who sits opposite the front door, that's the secretary I should go to? So he said, yeah. I said, oh, so her name is Rachel. So he looks at me and goes, and why do you know that? So I stopped for a second, and I realized he told me something right. There's no reason I was on a first name basis with her. No, he had a good point. So that's the Mishnah says, if Chazal told us not to have idle chatter in excess with our own wives, so certainly with my friend's wife, I'm not supposed to be sitting there just shooting the breeze, and certainly not flirting with women at the checkout counter or something else. That's not what I'm supposed to be doing. Yes, someone had their hand up. Yes.
I want to know how to call mistress in Hebrew.
What does that word mean?
I mean, suppose you told me that, you told us that mistress, the wife of Rosh Lisman, mistress Lisman, like that, you have to call like, and so in Hebrew, how should we say mistress?
You say Giveret.
Giveret.
Okay. One of your friends has got, in English it's Mrs. 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 Mrs.
No.
Okay, so
we are away home.
Mistress means something else. So Mrs. is Giveret.
Oh.
Giveret. Okay, so I know, I'll tell you two stories. We had a worker in yeshiva who was very not learned. And I always tried to treat him respectfully. And one day, I come to the bathroom and I see he's cleaning the bathroom. On the outside and on the inside. He has a rag in his hand and he's cleaning the bathroom really well. Really well. With his bare hands. On the outside and on the inside. And I wondered how many times I shook his hand. So I said to him, Mr. I'll make up a name, Mr. Levy. That wasn't his name. Mr. Levy, do you want me to get you a set of gloves? And he said, no. And I said, you know, you're cleaning places that are not so clean. Maybe you'd like a pair of gloves. And he said to me, I'm cleaning a yeshiva. It's holy. Okay. So Mr. Levy, everyone else called him by his first name. And after that encounter, I sort of understood why. And I didn't. I always called him Mister. And when I buy at the Makolet, and the guy tells me his name is Avi, and I ask him, what's your last name? And he tells me, Eliasi, and I'm not good with names, but I write it down, and I always call him Mr. Eliasi. Now, the guy's a grandfather already, and all the little kids call him Avi. Avi, give me candy. Avi, give me mastic. Avi, I give him that respect. And over the years, I've learned in calling, I don't remember his last name, but when I was in high school, the janitor, his name was Christopher, but he was old enough to be our grandfather. And I don't remember his last name. I don't remember. Because everyone called him Chris. And I asked him what his last name was, and I'd always call him Mr., whatever his last name was. I don't remember. And over the years, people slowly started telling me how much they appreciated that no one gave them that honor. It could be the bus driver, who was an Arab, who I called Mr., whatever it was. I think it was Anati. And it could be the janitor, and it could be the doorman, and it could be the guy who cleaned the toilets, Mr. Levy. over the years, people have given me back feedback. Initially, they all say, no, I'm Avi, I'm Chaim, I'm Yitzchak, I'm Itzik. But when they see that you sincerely mean to show them a certain respect, and I'm talking about men, not only women, so they respect it when they see it's sincere. The second point is, and people argued this with me, over the years, we've been having these classes, and I've been saying the same thing, and people tell me that in the workplace it's not acceptable, and people will laugh at them, and people will think they're being overly dignified. However, in the last half a year, with all the different claims of inappropriate behavior in the workplace, so it's been discussed throughout the United States that maybe people should start doing like they used to do in England, calling one another Mr. and Mrs. and not going on a first name basis. So even the secular world recognizes that that distance will gain us something. It's an important distance. And when I'm questioned about it, people will sometimes ask me, why are you calling me Mrs. whatever? You're making me feel old. That's my mother. That's not me. That's a line I get often. Don't call me Mrs. That's my mother. So I usually say, look, part of the fidelity in the relationship between a husband and wife can also be that we don't call other women or men by a first name basis. Just like my wife knows that I'm not going to have that type of relationship with any other woman. I'm not going to go calling other women by their first name. And when women hear that, I've found that they become very respectful. When they realize that it comes from a pure place. It's not a game. If they see you take it seriously, and they see you're sincere. I agree with you that when we haven't done it earlier and we start, so initially it raises eyebrows, but over time people learn to respect it. I remember I gave a class that you shouldn't be looking at the same computer screen with your secretary. She'll look on her computer screen, you'll look on yours, because when two people look on a computer screen, there's room for one head, so their heads come very close together. So I gave a class, and everyone argued with me. They were all business people. They all said to me, it doesn't work, and I said, wait a second. Today, you can download for free a program, TeamViewer. There are so many programs you can download for free that you both see the same screen. You're both on one another's computer, and there's no problem. So why not? And 2 or 3 months later, these business people came back and they said, you know, I never noticed it, but ever since you told me, I implemented it in my workplace, and it changed a lot. It created a certain sensitivity to the dignity that has to be retained between me and my secretaries, etc. And they saw they benefited from it. And again, they didn't like it when I first said it. The people in the class, they all thought it would end up looking weird. Coming back to our Mishnah. מכאן אמרו חכמים, from here our sages taught, כל זמן שאדם הרבה שיחה עם האישה, I'll add another point. Before we moved to Kochav Yaakov, I had a rule that if a woman would email me personal questions, if they were beyond a certain range, then I'd say you have to get a Rebbetzin. If they weren't beyond that range, so I'd answer the first time, I'd answer the second time, and after the third time, I'd say, I see you really, you have good questions. Let's try to get you a Rebbetzin. Sometimes I saw that, let's say a girl was dating one of our guys, and she had questions, but she was asking good questions, but it was going to develop into a relationship, you know. She's going to ask back and forth. We're going to have a relationship by the time this is done. So then I would insist, I would say, look, I have a rule that once I see I'm communicating with a woman on a steady basis, all the emails that are between you and me, my wife has to be CC'd on. I said, if it were one question or two questions, that's fine. Once I see you have a lot of questions, and I'm willing to try and answer them, but it has to be that every email you send me and every email I send you, my wife is also CC'd on the emails. And that's a rule I work with. So that was a rule then. Today, I also tell them that you should just know that my wife has access to my emails Always. My wife has access. Automatically on the home computer, she could enter all the emails, and she has free reign in my emails as well. There has to be a certain understanding that you're communicating with me and my wife. I'm not developing a relationship here outside my marriage. And that's something which people have to think about in terms of today you don't have a choice. There are going to be scenarios where you're in contact with women, and sometimes it's more than once. So if you have to, there has to be some kind of system set up that keeps the relationship in the confines of a modest relationship. Yes? So that's what I said before I moved to Kochav Yaakov. Before I moved to Kochav Yaakov, I was much more strict. Even if it was straight halacha, if she asked me three times, then the rule was either I get you a rabbanit or my wife was cc'd on the emails. Now that I'm in Kochav Yaakov, so I have a responsibility to the community. I can't do that after a woman asked me three questions. You know, do I have to wash my kids' hands nigelwasser in the morning from what age? And do I make when I make benching on Matzei Shabbos, do I say ritzei? She's going to ask me three questions that are not personal at all. And the fact of the matter is, I have a responsibility to the women of the congregation also on some level. So there it runs differently. There, so long as it's not personal, they know that my wife has access. They know that if they want to meet me face to face, it has to be with their husband or my wife present, or in a very public place. Now they can ask dry halachic questions people can ask. That shifted, but before I had this responsibility, even that wouldn't go. At this point, it's like you also have to remember that I'm answering over 100 questions a week, Baruch Hashem. So it's not, I don't even remember who asked the question twice. Like when people come back, when people come back, I always tell them, could you repeat like what was part one? Because I don't remember. Like people ask me, you know, I asked you A last week, I want to continue with B. And I say, I don't remember what A was. I honestly don't remember. Like I once asked my wife, are we supposed to daven for so-and-so? They were, for a long time, they couldn't get pregnant. And my wife said to me, last month you circumcised their son. I don't remember. I don't remember. So I had to check in with my wife. If I forgot to check off that name of the people I'm davening for, right? I really don't remember. I'm saying so. It shifts. It changes. It's not personal anymore. I'm saying that. Coming back to our Mishnah. So the Mishnah says, "Mikan amru chachamim." From here, our sages taught. Kol zman she'adam arbe sichai ma'isha. If a person does have idle chatter in excess, gorim ra le'atzmo, he should know he's harming himself. That's not what you're supposed to be doing with your free time. Uvotel midivrei Torah. Person can spend all his nights just doing idle chatter. He's not going to end up learning Torah that way. You have that free time. You should try to make good use out of it. V'sofo yiresh geinam. And ultimately, he'll find himself in perdition. Because when people have pointless chatter, it doesn't end up being pointless chatter about good things. It's very hard to have pointless chatter that's innocuous. It very easily shifts into lashon hara or complaining, all kinds of conversations which are not positive. Yoshua ben Prachya and Nitaya Arbeli kiblu mehem. The next pair who received the tradition were Yoshua ben Prachya and Nitaya Arbeli. Yoshua ben Prachya is the one that the Talmud tells us was the Rebbe of Yeshu. So notice how early he was in the Second Temple era. Yoshua ben Prachya is the fourth generation here. That means he was approximately 2.5 centuries before the destruction of the Second Beit HaMikdash. The Second Beit HaMikdash lasted for 420 years. Yoshua ben Prachya was almost 300 years before the destruction of the Second Beit HaMikdash. And the Gemara that tells us the story about his student who left observancy and developed his own religion, and he's known as Yeshu. So that's a student of Yoshua ben Prachya, and that's what Nachmanides says in his debate with the apostate. He says, what the Talmud tells us about Yeshu is not the Yeshu the Christians are talking about. Because the Talmud is talking about a Yeshu that lived 2.5 centuries before the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. The destruction of the Beit HaMikdash was 70 of the Common Era. So he lived 300 years before that. That's when his Rabbi Yoshua ben Prachya lived. So Yoshua ben Prachya taught, Asei lecharav, make sure you have a Rebbe. A person should always try to have a Rebbe. You could learn, and then you'll have all kinds of doubts. And then you'll say, I'll be machmir, I'll just be stringent. Bad move. If you spend your life not verifying what the halacha is and just being stringent, then you're gonna fry out in the end. You fizzle. A person can't spend his life that way, and that's not the way Torah is supposed to be observed. You're supposed to find out what the halacha really is. So Yeshua ben Brachia taught, Asei lecha rav, uknei lecha chaver, acquire a friend. Every person needs friends. People think after they get married, their wife is their best friend. Your wife is your partner and friend and everything. You still need friends. People need friends. Women need friends. Men need friends. Your wife is a totally different thing, and you still need friends. Ve'vedan et kol adam nekafsechut, and judge every person favorably. You see someone doing something, you know the person, he's an upstanding Jew, he's a good person. Judge him favorably. Why should you judge differently? That's a mitzvah in this week's parasha. In this week's parasha it says, B'tzedek tishpot amitecha. Chazal say, that means judge him favorably. Now this happens all the time. We constantly have choices how to judge people, and I can tell you in my life, I keep learning lessons how I should be judging people more favorably. I have to judge them more favorably. And every time I say I should judge even more favorably. And people who judge favorably lead a happier life. Because if I walk around the world and I think he's my enemy, and he did that to me, I end up being annoyed at everyone. But if I keep thinking, he didn't mean badly, he didn't... There was once a big machlokes, and many people went out against a certain rabbi. And then a conversation came up, and someone asked me something, and I said, what do I know? And I didn't stand up for the rabbi. I said, how would I know? I don't know anything. And for years it bothered me that there was no reason I didn't judge him favorably. Why was I so docile? I said, I don't know. It's the truth, I don't know. But I had no reason to think badly. So why didn't I say anything? So after about 2 decades, the rabbi was an old man. I called him up. And I said, Rabbi, I want to apologize. There was once a conversation, and people spoke, and I'm not sure I was positive enough. I was like, I don't know. So his response was so beautiful. He said, I'm sure you meant well. I'm sure you meant for good reasons. I'm sure you didn't mean to say anything that would be hurtful to me. I said, no, I want to ask Mechila. And he said, I don't think you have what to ask Mechila for. And if you do, of course, a mocha, you should have a good deal. Da, 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 da. I was shocked. The man suffered so much from the machlokas. And I had just taken a step. I just said, I don't know. Now, I only had positive to say about him. It's true that what people were saying about him, I knew nothing about. But I also knew nothing negative. So to be silent is sometimes also not fair. I don't know if I was right or wrong. I don't know. But I was impressed by the way he was able to be done the kav zchut. Right away he said, I'm sure you didn't mean that. I'm sure you didn't mean to do anything that would be hurtful to me. That's nice. How does he know? He made a choice. He made a choice to be dan lekav zchut. The Mishnah says, "Evedan et kol adam lekav zchut." Now, the beginning of the Mishnah, "Say lecharav." In the Jewish home, this can resolve many, many arguments, because unfortunately, things come up revolving around halacha where a husband and a wife can disagree. So let's take 15 examples now that come up in the Jewish home, okay? We'll take some simple examples. Your wife wants to buy the kashrut of Rabbanut on meat and chicken, Yom Ha'atzmaut Mango. You say, I hear we should invest extra money and buy a better kashrut. She says, I'll invest that extra money. You'll tell me we don't have money for your daughter's piano lessons. Boom. They have a fight. But wait, it started with a question. Halacha, hashkafa, where should we invest money in a better kashrut or not? Your wife wants to buy lettuce. You tell her, I heard Rav Amar said that you really shouldn't buy the pesticide lettuce. You should take each leaf and clean it with soap and clean it like this and clean it like that. And she goes, thanks, Charlie. You prepare the lettuce. I'm not doing that. And you go, wait, you don't respect halacha? I just told you, Rav Amar came out with this whole letter 4 years ago. This is what you should do. She goes, so you do it. Again, it's a natural fight. It's normal in a home. But it started where? With a halachic question. You walk in one morning and tell your wife, we're not idealistic enough. I want us to move out to the Shomron to Hilltop. You guys are laughing. There's a guy who lives five houses from here who did that. So he shows up one day and he tells his wife, I learned and I became inspired and I came to the conclusion we should all go live on a hilltop. So his wife goes, no. So he goes, why not? So she goes, we have our kids' education here. I have my job here. He goes, our kids can get better education there. You can get another job there. And then he goes, you just like the beautiful tiling I put in on the floor. You like the luxury of living in the city. You're not willing to let me realize my religious potential. I was brought to this world for a purpose. This is a real argument, black and white. So, where did it all start from? It started from good intentions. He wanted to keep Torah and mitzvot. Now, I could go on. When I said 15 examples off the bat, I can give you many, many examples. This comes up. So the guy comes to yeshiva. He did not learn here. He comes to a different yeshiva I was learning in, and he tells me the story. And I said to him, want my opinion? He says, I know your opinion. I said, really, what is it? He goes, you're on my side. I said, so you want my opinion? He says, okay, I'm willing to hear it, you know. So I said, okay, you're wrong. So he goes, what do you mean I'm wrong? I said, in marriage, if she's bringing up your kids well, if she's living with you as a husband and wife, so she's giving you what she owes you. You're having a basic relationship with her. She's bringing up the kids well. What do you want? You want her to be idealistic and go live on a hilltop? No, you can't demand that of her. So he goes, what about my potential? I said, realize it in Kiryat Moshe. Find places to volunteer, take kids to educate. There are other ways to realize your potential. You don't have to do it on a hilltop. It doesn't work for her. The answer is no. You're making a mistake in your whole perspective. He says to me, I'm ready to divorce her. I said, you see how wrong you are? So he says, you're wrong. I said, okay, who do you respect? So, I don't know if I'm allowed to say who, but I think I'm allowed to say. He chose Rav Aviner. He sent Rav Aviner a letter. And Rav Aviner wrote back basically what I told him. You have no right to divorce your wife over this. What do you want from her? So you want to be idealistic? Find a way to be idealistic in the neighborhood you're living. You can't just destroy your marriage. Asay lecharav. Asay lecharav, the Mishnah says, when you and your wife decide, there's a rabbi we respect, when we have a question how we should view halacha, we're going to go and ask him, you've just diffused so many fights within a marriage. Because if the question is which lettuce should we buy, it's not you versus her. It's not, but I read an article by Rav Amar. It's, we have a Rav, we both respect him, let's go ask him. You go and ask him. He said you should eat the regular lettuce. You eat the regular lettuce, and you swallow your pride. The Rav said, no, you shouldn't eat regular lettuce. So go do like Rav Amar said. So either you'll stop eating lettuce in your house, you'll check the lettuce in your house, or your wife will. But she won't be upset at you, because it's not you versus her. You've just diffused a tremendous, tremendous stumbling block that people have in their marriage, especially Chozrim B'Tshuva. Very often, Chozrim B'Tshuva, because they're so sincere, tend to see the world as black and white. This is what's right, this is what we should do. And the world isn't, and halacha isn't black and white. There are opinions, there are shades of gray, not everything is either kosher or not kosher. There are levels of stringency, and this is where a person benefits, asay lecharav. And my recommendation is, find, you need a rav who your wife feels comfortable with. You also have to feel comfortable with. Preferably you find a rav who's local, who understands what's going on where you're living, and preferably you find a rav who has experience with Chozrim B'Tshuva, so that they can understand the fluctuations in your life and your educational challenges. Bottom line, asay lecharav. The Mishnah says, make sure you have a rav. Make sure you have a rav, so you don't run into all the questions that come up. Knei lecha chaver, invest in friendship. Invest in friendship. Husbands can be very jealous. Wives can be very jealous. You should want your wife to have friends, and your wife should want you should have friends. Now that doesn't mean that when you show up after a day's work and your wife wants to share with you what's been happening in her life, you're going to be on your cell phone all day. Your cell phone should be off. You came home, you're with your wife. People should make it a habit that when they walk through the front door, they shut their cell phones. You shouldn't be on WhatsApp. You shouldn't be talking to people. You shouldn't be on email. Connect to your wife. There's a tragic thing that goes on today. You go to restaurants, you'll see people sitting with their cell phones at the restaurants. Are you talking to the other person or not? Why don't you just send messages to one another? You know, he's eating his meal, she's eating her meal. They're on the cell phone with other people. Would you invite other people to your date? Invest in friendship. Acquire a friend. So on the one hand, I said, you need friends. On the other hand, when you're spending the time building your relationship with your spouse, that's not the time to be acquiring friends in other places. People today don't have friends. People don't have friends. They have a lot of friends on Facebook, but they don't really have friends. We're not in a popularity contest. You don't need 50 friends. You need one or two good friends that you want to spend time with. Imagine you're celebrating your 20th, 30th, 40th, 50th birthday. Okay? Now I'm going to ask you a question. If you had a choice, who to celebrate it with? If you had a choice, someone who you could appreciate this moment with and be happy that they're there with you. Do you have one person that's true about? Most people don't. They have the people who make them feel good. They have the people who it's nice to see them. He likes me and I like him and we could go on a hiking trip together. But now, let's ask a real question. Do you have someone who means so much to you that at the meaningful moments of your life you want them there? You want to celebrate with them? And the answer that most people will tell you is no. I'll be happy to drink a beer with him. I'll be happy to go out to a cup of coffee with him. But it's not like I want him there for the most meaningful moments of my life. I want him to dance with me at my wedding. That's not the question I asked. To dance at your wedding, you'll be happy with 50 people dancing at your wedding. That's not the point. The point is a meaningful relationship. I want to share with them what's going on in my life. So you should know that that's the relationship you want to build with your wife. In that sense, your wife is your best friend. And in that sense, most people mess up. They don't attain that with their wives. And one of the reasons is that people don't have date night religiously. People do not make sure, and it has to be religious. It has to be every week, aside from Friday night, that should be holy time for the family. Aside from Shabbos, that should be holy time for the family. There should be a morning, an afternoon, or a night where you invest in your relationship with your spouse, where it's only you. You go out without the kids, without disturbances. You want to build a relationship, you have to invest. The Mishnah calls it acquire a friend. People don't invest, and then they wonder why they don't have relationships. Go hiking with a guy. Go cross country with a guy. You'll have a different relationship. You think you'll develop a relationship from sharing emojis on Facebook? It ain't happening. It doesn't. Even if you invent an emoji in his honor, you can write a song in honor of his birthday. It won't do it. It involves investment. It involves time. Investment means I'm going to be there for him when he has to share something with me. Investment means I'm going to take the time to travel 2 hours to spend an hour with him. And that's the same thing as with our spouse. And it doesn't matter what's going on in our lives. We have to make it holy. We will spend this time together. And it has to happen every week. You're happier together, you're less happy. Your wife told you 15 times, forget it. We're not going on the date this week. You tell her, I understand you're upset at me, and we are going on the date this week. I can't give up on the date. That's a meaningful thing. I can't give up on the date. No, as bad, we're upset at one another, we're still going on that date this week. Believe me, your wife will tell you. You don't love me anyways. Why do you want to go on a date? You just want a good hot dog? Go without me. You'll enjoy it more. And you're going to feel like telling her, you bet I'll enjoy it more. You don't answer that. You say, no, I'm not going out without you. We're going together. And it doesn't matter what she says, it's a given. You're going out together. And if people stick to that, then they start developing a real relationship. If people allow themselves and they have an argument or a fight or things aren't good, we won't go on a date this week. They could find themselves running 3 years without a date. And then they drift apart. So drift back together again. Come back and recreate. Shnei lecha chaver. The Mishnah calls it to acquire a friend. Friendship involves investment. People drift apart because they let themselves drift apart. If you're going to invest, then you can have a relationship. Then you can have a friend. Now that also means listening to someone else and I don't feel like listening to them. I have better things to do with my time than listen to them. No, you don't. That's acquiring a friend. Right now they need, I'm going to sit there and listen. So, imagine the following scenario. You had a friend, you trusted them, and you had a relationship. And then one day, your friend is caught that they're a drug trafficker. That's a very terrible thing. They've been destroying people's lives all these years. You thought you knew them. Now you discover your friend has been trafficking drugs. And your friend's going to jail for a long time. Now I want to ask you, what do you do with that? I'm giving you a very simple scenario. You had a relationship. You thought you knew him. You thought you had a good relationship. You liked the person you knew. And now suddenly there's an aspect of him you didn't know. And now you do know.
How much interaction would you have with them now?
What?
I mean, are you going to be writing letters to them in jail? Or what's the choice that you're making here in terms of the interaction?
Let's take another scenario, okay? The scenario I'm telling you now happened in a yeshuv here in Israel. It's a true story. It's a fascinating story. But I don't think the people here appreciate what it means to be a drug trafficker. So we'll give a different scenario. You have a friend who's forgetful. And his wife tells him, Timothy, put that app on your phone so you don't forget one of the kids in the back seat. And Timothy says, I'll get to it. And you beg Timothy and you say, Timothy, put that app on your phone, you don't forget a kid in the back seat. And then one day you see the car. And you see the kid in the back of the car. And you run to the car. And I don't know, I don't want to describe to you what it looks like to see a kid that died from the sweltering heat of being stuck in the back of a car. And Timothy never put that app on his phone. And you break the window, and you try to see what you can do with that baby. And you touch his scorching hot skin, and you see what he's just been through. And I won't go into all the gory details of what you hold in your hand. Now, Timothy's going to jail. Are you going to visit him there? Excuse me, Timothy, I begged you to put that app on your phone. You pleaded with him. You told him, give me the phone, I'll put the app on. And he said, do you know if it's safe? Do you know when you said to him, it's not safe to leave your kid that way. It's going to happen. You forget things. You have to have that app on your phone. And he kept postponing you. So now you are very judgmental, and rightfully so. You begged him, you offered him, you told him this would happen. And now it did. And the poor baby suffocated to death, and it's all his fault. Now what?
Be angry.
And you can't look at him, you're ready to kill him. You look at the baby, you look at him, and now what? So we're going to pick up with that, Bezat Shem, next week. Think about it. It's not a joke. In life, we have to deal with real flaws that people have.
With that story, though, is it rightful to...